Welcome back to another episode of the Huxley Morton podcast, the show where each week we speak to pharma company owners and industry leaders sharing their stories of personal and professional growth. We're now on series 4 of the show, and as you may already be aware, we're on a mission to help clinical researchers from around the world with tips, tricks, and inspiration. So if you could do me a quick favor and please hit that follow or subscribe button, it really does help more than you'll ever know. For now though, sit back, relax, and let's take things from here. Now this week on the show, we do have an industry leader. It's Mr. Adam Walker, often my co-host, but no one else. So as a bit of a flip to the script, this week, Adam is kind enough to actually come on and share our story. So Lucy and I, Lucy Gilmore, my co-founder at Huxley Morton, to treat you all to, how we got started. But so Adam, I'm normally introducing other people, but look, over to you.
I'll put you guys both on the hot seat. So firstly, I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to ask some questions to you, James, because I know over the last few months we've got to know each other quite well. And obviously, not so long ago, we also met in person. And it felt like the right time perhaps to just turn it back on its head, like you said, and ask those questions back to you two. Because I think what's clear to me working alongside you both is that not only are you gaining traction, but there is a story behind the story. And I think that's probably interesting, perhaps to our podcast listeners and certainly to our followers, because, you know, ultimately this is about the human story. And so how about I ask the first question, which is what you normally do. So give me a little bit of background to yourself, James and Lucy, as to how Huxley Morton came about, because I think it's interesting just to hear the name as much as anything else, but also, you know, your route into the industry, because that'd be great.
Sure. Well, look, I guess how did we get into recruitment? It's going back now. Lucy and I originally used to work together in the City of London, going back maybe 15 years.
Yeah, so we've worked together before, not in recruitment. We were actually selling photocopiers and phone systems. James was in sales, I was in project management. Then James left and you actually ventured into recruitment.
I fell into it, Adam. I guess we were both doing quite well in the world of sales and I guess IT sales, photocopiers. Lucy was running the project management team. I was running the sales floor. Both doing, I would say, pretty well. City high flyers, I thought, kind of at the time. Out every night, drinking, absolutely loving life. I got into a bit of an argument with my boss and ended up leaving. So he wanted me to, I guess, overcharge and then even more overcharge a charity and almost take next to no commission for it. And I was just kind of like, I'll just rip up the contract. I'm not bothered about that. So had a big run-in with him and ended up kind of, it was almost like the master arguing with the junior that he had trained for about 8 years. And then the next week I was out the door, didn't know what to do. Ended up speaking to a few friends who had said, look, you're a good talker, you're a good communicator. Have you ever thought about recruitment? And my opinion of the recruitment industry wasn't overly high, I have to say. But I went for a few interviews, got offered, I think, every job everywhere that I interviewed. But one of the places, I had a relationship with the CEO, had, you know, gone to the gym with him a few times, ended up working there because it was people that I liked. And that is, I guess, where the first bit of the recruitment journey started, kind of working for someone else. I was recruiting freelance engineering and construction professionals all around the world. You know, if it was a needle in a haystack type of gig, that was it. So that's how we first came across it. I then left that company. Lucy was still at our former company. Quite stressed, weren't you?
Yeah, I stayed on. To say it got stressful, it was always a stressful job. It was really long hours. At that point, James had already left recruitment as well. And it got to the point where I was really unhappy as well. We were kind of at that point where we wanted to start a family. We just sat down one night and said, like working in the city and having a family and working at the level we were, wasn't going to work. So how could we work this? So we kind of just thought, well, why don't we try it for ourselves? Why don't we set up our own company?
And have a family. So, for our listeners, if they're not aware, it's fair to say you two are an item and you are now a family, right?
Yes.
Correct, so, yes.
Yeah, that's probably should have started with that.
Probably should have, yeah, but don't you now be writing in and pushing me for this ring. I'll get enough of that from my friends and family.
But we have been together now, 11 years. So, we started off from our bedroom, at our spare room at our old house, and basically just started off the two of us. Obviously, I'd never done recruitment before, so it was a complete learning curve for me. I had to learn sales, I had to do cold calling, which I was not comfortable with at all, and to be honest, I still don't like doing it. I've kind of managed to eat myself away from that a bit these days, but it worked, didn't it? It was a culture shock, I think, for us as much as anything as well, because obviously we've been used to traveling. You know, we used to get into the office for most mornings, 6:30 in the morning, we'd be in the city. Wow. And we'd get home at sort of 7-8 o'clock at night. So it was a real culture shock to not have that commute. And I would say it probably took a couple of years to kind of get our head around that, didn't it?
It was strange, wasn't it? I guess we were still trying to mirror that city lifestyle of being busy.
Yes.
So, you know, we would get up at, before having our son Axel, we would get up at 5 a.m. every morning and go for a walk for an hour and a half before then having some breakfast and still starting work at 7:30.
Yeah. So you already had the routines and you already had the behaviors around that, and you adapted that then to your own situation.
So rather than the train commute, we did an hour and a half walk around. It was great because it clears your mind, it gets you focused for the day. It was not kind of like a meeting for us to talk about our plan of action, our strategy, and it worked really well. And then the company has kind of, we ran it as a lifestyle business for 3 years at least, and then we were starting to think about gearing up a level, and coronavirus hit, which kind of turned
everything upside down
really for us.
So when you say it was a lifestyle business, that doesn't sound like recruitment. It sounds like you've pivoted. Have you pivoted?
No, in the sense of a lifestyle business was that it was just James and I. We wanted to keep it small at that point, fit it in around our lifestyle, albeit, be honest, it was pretty much work. Anyway,
it was different.
You know, we didn't have regimented hours. Obviously, when Axel came along, it allowed us to, you know, share the care. It wasn't a case of it was just all on me. You know, James could help out. And I guess just enjoy that first year as well of having a baby. So that was perfect. And I'd say it was when Axel came about 1 year old, wasn't it? We decided, okay, I think we're ready to now maybe transition this from a lifestyle business and get other people on board and make it more, not corporate, but, you know, a little bit more.
Add some structure. What we had, but doing it in our own way. Because I think that the reason that we ended up getting into recruitment was because I had, I guess, as I said, fallen into it by chance in an argument from my boss. You know, it wasn't necessarily planned. And I was terrible to start with in recruitment. You know, I remember kind of interviewing with, it was a James Khan group, so from Dragon's Den, and I interviewed with sort of a few of the COOs of the group, and they were really impressed. They were expecting loads of big things. I did next to no money for 3 to 6 months, and they were kind of like, who is this guy? He's making all these calls, he's doing all these things, sounds great, but he's getting nowhere. I was racking my own brains. I was like, I always used to be the top salesperson, but what's going on here? So I asked around, and everyone was saying, look, you need to be networking, you need to be building relationships on the candidate side of things, not just selling to clients.
Yeah.
So I just started taking all my energy and got into that. And all of a sudden, just all of that groundwork and that compound effect of just doing ridiculous amount of phone calls and networking over that 6 months and onwards just spiraled. And then overnight, I went from kind of zero to hero.
Yes.
The top biller in the firm by a long way, and then never looked back. But towards my end of my journey there, I just wasn't getting challenged anymore. I was almost doing a 4-day week, spending Friday in the pub, doing a bit of admin and preparing for the following week. But oddly enough, that seemed to almost pay even more dividends because of, you know, planning. You've heard the saying, you know, fail to plan, plan to fail. But that Friday planning and relaxing element almost set me up to do even more business. But I just really wasn't enjoying the fact that they were asking me how many phone calls I was making and how many interviews I was booking. I was like, have you not looked at the sales board and how massively far ahead I am? I just got frustrated with it and just wasn't even enjoying it. You know, I was earning a boatload of money, but not enjoying it. And we'd always planned to run a business of a sort. So I left before even having a job to go to, did some sales training, and then kind of got pulled back into it.
Yeah.
And then Lucy jumped on board and we kind of created that structured lifestyle routine before then deciding let's take this to the next step and start employing some people.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there has to be something that gives you the push. I've had a similar experience myself several times, actually. And ultimately, the drive within you can take anywhere. Whether you have a taskmaster and someone who takes skims off the top, or you do that for yourself and you have those principles and you have the work ethic, no one's going to put that there for you. If you haven't got it, you can't put it there. But it sounds like what you're describing is you're between the two of you've always had that work ethic. You've always been motivated to succeed. And I think it sounds like ultimately it's been driven towards, you know, gaining the most from that capability that you have between the two of you, and that drive and motivation.
I think it's just being busy, isn't it? Yeah. We don't like the idea of almost relaxing too much. You know, I get that.
Yeah. I do get that. I mean, for our listeners, I don't know whether they're aware, but I know that you get up very early in the morning and you do lots of exercise, don't you, James?
I claim to. You know, it's not been,
we've been all
too
relaxed.
Good recently, yeah, but we like to be busy.
Yeah,
it's just something that keeps us going. And the thought of having a kind of a 9-to-5 job for us now is just odd. You know, I'd rather work all the hours under the sun for my own vision and business and with Luce than, you know, almost a couple of hours for someone else where I have to answer and report in. And, you know, that probably explains why I was an absolute nightmare to manage previously. But it's the results.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because you find a way that it sounds like you found a way that works for both of you, for your family and for the business, but also as you're growing that out. How do you ask then your staff to work within that structure or lack of structure? How do you put that to your colleagues?
Well, I guess it's different, really, isn't it, for them? A lot of our staff at the moment are starting out in the industry, and I guess almost need that structure. And so, I mean, we're not clocking on, you know, where are you sort of thing. There's an element of trust there, which I think, you know, in itself breeds people to want to work for you or with you. I mean, I say for you, we always say that people work with us, don't we?
I hate the idea of someone referring to me, like when our guys, you know, book meetings and they're like, oh, I'm going to book you in to speak to my boss. I'm like, please don't call me that. Just say your colleague or, you know, or James, you know, it's, yes, we have a structure for them because I think when you're starting out, you kind of need it.
Mm.
But as soon as they start getting their results, and if they're getting their results, for me, structure, kind of you plan your own structure. Mm. That's what we're trying to create, is almost a whole set of entrepreneurs. And if they end up going and working elsewhere in future, fair play to them. Mm. You know, it's tough. We struggled ridiculously at the beginning.
Mm.
And I can't remember if I've told you, you know, some of the stories where we were staying up till midnight to put brochures together, like almost a PDF brochure for a client that wanted our company brochure back then.
Yeah.
And we were like, a company brochure? We don't have one.
Yeah.
But I will get one. If it means signing some terms of business and doing a deal with you, I will get it.
And that was before the days of Canva. That was looking back now, it's almost laughable what we put together, but it got the deal, we got the job done, and it did win some other business off the back of it.
Oh, it was awful. I have to send you it. You will not. It is absolutely terrible. But I think that's our mentality. Like we're doers. If we say we're gonna do something, it will get done. Mm. It may not be perfect, but it will get done. And I think that was probably one of our first moments of real joy in the business, because we went for ages with no money. You know, I'd come from working 4 days a week and sitting in a pub on a Friday and outperforming everyone to nothing, and thinking I would just pick it up, probably a bit arrogantly, and getting nowhere. You know, we were worried about, we were kind of watching the pounds and pennies go down as to how many months mortgage and bills have we got left. And it was getting to the point where we were going food shopping. I was like, do we buy two packs of potatoes or just the one? Do you, you know, could we mix it up with some salad? And it was crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I think presumably over the last 18 months, 2 years, things have been different for you. And over the course of that time, I've seen your efforts increase significantly. Has that reflected back in the business and the interest that you're getting to Huxley Morton right now?
I would say so. I mean, it was, as I was saying earlier, we were looking to level up at sort of the, you know, pre-COVID times, and then it all fell off a cliff edge with COVID, and we've had to really reinvent ourselves. I mean, we were doing engineering previously, and that literally ground to a halt, and we probably didn't realize it at the time, but we were probably feeling the impact of that sooner than most, because it was kind of, I think we went into lockdown in the UK around March, but it was actually sort of January. We came back after Christmas thinking we're going to have an amazing first quarter to the year. I mean, we had so much business in the pipeline, and then gradually just things kept dropping off, and we were like, what is going on? And it really wasn't until March, because even clients weren't saying to us, this is happening, because we do a lot in the APAC region, but nobody was really talking about it at that point until it literally, you know, we were shutting down in the UK, and then everything sort of fell into place, and we were like, okay, and literally all our business that we had prepared for the first quarter of that year literally got wiped off the board. We had taken on someone, and we had to let them go. And it was kind of a time where we were like, Christ, what are we going to do? But then we thought, no, we're just going to keep going. And we just put our head down. We put together a training guide, because we knew we still wanted to take people on. We thought, well, as it's a bit quieter, let's just get all the training together, get the manual
together. Use
your
time wisely.
And then I think it was in the July of 2020, we then took on someone, because we just thought we're just going to go for it. And it was them that came on and then had the kind of, they'd worked within the recruitment previously and covered life sciences. And he said, look, I've got this network, you know, this could work for us. I mean, this industry is moving, and it's moving at the moment, which was, you know, what we needed to hear, because I think the recruitment as a whole across most sectors had literally ground to a halt as well. Yes. So we looked into it and we kind of went from there, really, didn't we?
And it was, I guess it was funny, because we didn't know what we were getting into, but we kind of had just a lot of belief in ourselves. I think, you know, when I mentioned earlier that, you know, at times we were struggling about wondering whether we were going to be able to pay the mortgage. At that time, because of our healthy earnings from previous years, we got massive tax rebates from the government. And the sensible thing to do at that time would have been bank it, cash flow for the business. We didn't. We booked a villa out in Spain, in Europe, for the whole family, and pay for everyone to go out, because we were like, we've been working ourselves to the bone. We didn't know that we had that money. So we were kind of like, easy come, easy go. We spent it before it even hit our banks. Took the whole family away, because we were like, you know what, we'll make it. And lo and behold, when we were on that holiday, I think it was two or three deals came in, and we were like, right, everyone, we're all going out for lunch today. And then they were kind of like, look, you don't need to. You've taken us on holiday. We know that business is tough at the moment. We're like, it's okay. We've had faith and we've been rewarded for it. And deals came in. And I think the same thing happened when we took this guy on and we said, let's do recruitment for clinical research. He explained it to us, and the similarities between a construction project and how a clinical trial project is structured, it's almost identical.
We had this conversation, didn't we? Exactly.
We did. All that changed was the job titles. And I was like, well, if we can find the top experts in construction in the world and get them to fly from, you know, Timbuktu to Afghanistan and wrap that all up in a package for, you know, a client that may be sitting in Manila, we can do recruitment for clinical trials in the US. And it didn't faze us because we were used to the international element. So we got into it, and we've not looked back since. It's come with its own different challenges, but it's been so enjoyable, and we like that busyness of the build.
You know, we've learned so much, and I think that was it. It was almost like we went back to startup mode, but it's been such an enjoyable learning curve for both of us because, well, we're learning a completely new sector, and we're meeting so many, you know, new and interesting people like yourself and the guests that we've had on the show. I think by doing the podcast has been a great way to get ourselves well immersed within the industry and find out quicker than maybe just hiding behind a screen and occasionally talking to candidates and clients when we've got a job. We just wanted to throw ourselves into the thick of it, I guess, was the reasoning behind that.
I think, you know, there's some real common threads that run through. As you say, James, you know, between engineering and life science, there aren't huge amount of differences. But I think, as I've said, life science industry is quite conservative. People don't really embrace change very, very well. And you tend to find very segmented behaviors and styles of individuals. And what I think I've recognized, certainly in the time that we've been working together, is really that understanding of how to open up opportunities and how to disrupt and influence and challenge that status quo, because that's what I'm seeing and hearing, certainly on all the podcasts I've been involved in and those that I've listened to prior to that. And the first time that we came into contact was when you reached out to me, James, wasn't it, via LinkedIn? And what a platform that's been for you. I mean, the amount of likes and shares that you're getting on that platform right now is incredible. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, through the influence of podcasting, but also I think getting under the skin of the industry very quickly, you're gaining an awful lot of traction. And I see that and feel that through the activity that I'm seeing on LinkedIn. But I'd love to hear that more from your experience as well, because, you know, they are different, engineering and life science, but at the same time, there are, as you say, an awful lot of similarities, aren't there?
I think about it, and it's a case of, I spoke a moment ago about the fact that when I started to do well in the engineering world of recruitment or just recruitment, it was not off the back of necessarily being the best. It was perhaps just being the most consistent and prepared to kind of do the work, knowing that it will pay at the back end. So I think, you know, when I first reached out to yourself, you know, little to no clients, little to no experience of the life science and industry, just not being afraid to ask questions. And by doing the podcast, I've immersed ourselves, both of us, haven't we, in just what's going on. And the podcast as a platform itself has now allowed us to rack up hundreds of hours speaking to company owners and industry leaders, sharing their stories of what they've done in a business. Often they've had to listen to this story and ours as we've talked away, but it's been fantastic. And it's networking. And yes, some of our guests have gone on to be clients, fantastic. Others, it's just an interesting story. And yourself, look, you know, you and I talk almost daily, whether it's via email, text, or on a podcast show ourselves. And it's just, I think sometimes the world of recruitment, I explained this when Lucy first got into it, is that so many recruiters are too busy trying to show how intelligent they are with big fancy words. And that's just not us. No. You know, we're kind of old school. We sold photocopiers and phone systems, or as a business we did. It was very much 1980s, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a bit.
It was get in there, do a deal, you're a nice boat. And there were so many characters in that industry. It was fantastic. But just that not go taking that almost brashness into recruitment and just saying, you know what? I don't know everything. You guys that we're recruiting are the technical specialists.
Tell me about it. Exactly. That's the questions you often ask, isn't it? Tell me how you do your job. Tell me what your job is. What does it mean? And actually, I think that was where it really resonated with me. But also, I think you've just hit the sweet spot, because what you identified and when you hit at the right time was people desperate within this industry, desperate for connection. That's the first thing. But also desperate to have a platform with which they could share information to people, because we weren't going to conferences anymore. We weren't able to jump on planes, and we certainly weren't meeting anyone around a water cooler. So this is the water cooler. Yeah. You know, this is our current day water cooler. And if you don't like it and you're not comfortable with it, then I would say that many of those people will have struggled over the last year, 18 months. And I think where it really resonated for me was, you were the first person that contacted me about doing the podcast. And at that time, and I still do, as you know, I love listening to podcasts. I think it's one of the strongest and most powerful mediums that there are right now to listen to people, whether or not you want to watch it or whether you want to listen to it when you're walking your dogs or do whatever you're doing when you're listening to your podcast. What's interesting is you can engage and your brain works in a different way. As you said, Lucy, you know, when you walk and talk, it's different. Your brain does different things when you're walking and talking rather than when it's all face-to-face contact. And it embeds different types of knowledge. And, you know, we've talked about some of the podcasts that we both love listening to, and they all seem to hit those marks and those levels. And I think that's what you tapped into brilliantly when you did, and how you've continued to do that, because I think that's what's driving not just the listenership, the interest, but also this is the new normal. You know, if you're not doing this, you're not doing anything as far as I'm concerned, whether it's recruitment or engaging with key opinion leaders in this industry. This is the way that people are talking and sharing now. So
yeah, I mean,
it has to be this way.
I would definitely recommend our listeners to kind of embrace LinkedIn, and certainly the job seekers out there, is get yourself on LinkedIn.
Massively.
Get posting. I mean, we kind of follow a system, don't we, James, of posting personal post,
valuable post, and then a credible
and
post.
And that's kind of, I mean, we haven't made that up by any means. That's, you know, we've actually invested in a marketing course to teach ourselves, because we appreciated how much more LinkedIn is getting used these days, and how much more that can help as a business. You know, the days of just being able to pick up the phone and cold call people, essentially, it works still to a degree, but really growing that network is through LinkedIn, is through speaking and connecting to people there. So we kind of follow that system of getting posts up regularly. I guess it's getting your name out there and getting people to see it, and whether it's, you know, they're actively reacting and liking or commenting on your stuff, or whether it's subconsciously because they're just seeing your name come up all the day. It eventually, I mean, it's not going to win any quick results, but over time, and the consistency, and that's one thing that both James and I are good at, is being consistent. You know, eventually it will all pay off. And we're starting to see, see the rewards.
Yeah, and it's slowly. I think it's a case of, like, we're very much happy to accept that there's a season to sow and there's a season to reap. You know, I think when everyone else was cutting back and saying, what do we do? Do we furlough staff? Do we do this? We were like, no, we've got a strategy. It's happened before.
Yeah.
We didn't know what we were doing then. You know, let's just go for it. It will work.
If we load
what we know.
If you do the right things, the right things will absolutely come back.
And there was a strategy for everything. So, like, the LinkedIn strategy, the, you know, how we approach things. We took on new innovations. You know, I treated you to a one of our little Loom videos. We use that internally now for training. We never used to do that because we didn't necessarily have to, but remote workers. Do we struggle with training? No. We speak one-to-one. You get a training video straight afterwards for any recap. So some people pick things up fast, some people don't. You know, they can watch it at their own speed and then come back to you with a question. It's so many little things that our business, we probably wouldn't have done in 5 to 10 years if we weren't faced with that big obstacle of COVID. And I think if anything, we've come out stronger for it as a business that is now going to be more scalable. And it will just continue that strategy.
I think that's the point, the scalability, because when the world opens up, and we're already experiencing, you know, here we are in towards the beginning of August, you know, when the world opens up even more, the face-to-face and the personal contact, I'm sure, is something that you'll then build upon and start going to conferences and seeing people when that happens again. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that I think you've proved and continue to prove that there are other ways to slice a cake, aren't there? This is the point, that you know, you've just got to think outside the box. Where some people see a closed opportunity, others see, where there is risk, there is change, there is opportunity, isn't there? And I think that's what I've seen in both of you, and in, you know, in the time that we've been engaged together. So that's great. So with regards to the business now, is it fair to say that you're on an upward trajectory over the last, you know, 9 months? You said you 9 to 12 months, you've had some challenges. Is that now starting to reap rewards? Are you seeing far more bang for your buck for that investment of time and effort and investing in new team members?
Slowly, yeah. Adam. Look, I would say you can always have more, and we're ambitious. We don't, I guess, celebrate success easily. We're quite hard on ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah,
right?
we've had a few small wins, but I think we've still got a way to go. As I said, and as we learn, I guess, first time around starting a business, you know, nearly six years ago, it is slow, and effectively we're now back in startup mode. So it's all working. We're seeing positive signs. We're having these conversations. And I think, yeah, in the next 6 months, we'll definitely start to reap the rewards of our hard work. But it's difficult because you do find yourself getting frustrated because you're feeling, oh, you know, we're doing all this and it doesn't seem to be paying off. You know, where are we going wrong? But then things do start to fall into place. And I remember it from the first time round. So I'm just, you know, I'm just...
Keep that belief. Maybe we should book another holiday.
When it works.
What struck me when you contacted me was quite how much traction and how many people at top tables you were interviewing and getting on your podcast. That amazed me. Not because I didn't believe it was possible, but actually I didn't realize how accessible these people were either. And I think that's what's been shown to me, is actually, if you knock on people's doors, you just never know what's behind or who's behind that door. And as soon as you open that door, it's a whole different level of conversation, isn't it? Very rapidly, within a very short period of time and a conversation, you're getting under the skin of that person. And they also are seeing it as an opportunity and a platform by which they can then pivot themselves. So that, you know, it really does work on many, many levels. And that's what I've seen particularly. But, you know, there are people that you've interviewed that first series, you know, Craig Lipsett, Scott Stout, my goodness me, these are all people I now would claim to know, actually, who certainly 12 months ago I wouldn't have known.
The podcast has ended up being...
I now have heard them.
I was just about to say, Adam, the podcast has almost been like its own mini recruitment network because you and Scott are now connected. I know that Scott, when he spoke to me off air, it was kind of like, oh, is there anyone that you think might be good as a bit of a farmer celebrate? I was like, you know what? I think I know a guy. You know, Craig Lipsett, teed them up. You know, there's been various connections that we've made, but that's just kind of, you know, it's what we do for a living.
Yeah.
But also we quite like to facilitate stuff, knowing that what you put out, you're going to get back. And it's been...
And we've talked about that as well, haven't we?
It's been great fun as well.
Yes. So what are you learning? What are you learning about this wonderful industry that I've been working in for 25 years? What are you What do you think about it?
People are so much nicer in World of Farmer than they are in construction, I have to say.
Is that right?
Yes. Certainly on the client side. Like some of the expat guys that we know, and you know, a lot of my network on the engineering side of things, they're in their late 50s, early 60s, early 70s. You know, they're kind of looking at retirement, but they love what they do. Really nice guys. Will fly out anywhere at the drop of a hat. But they're amazing. We've actually met up with some of our candidates. Again, talking about that network and some things, we go to meet them. We've been on holiday and met people, gone out for dinner and things like that. But on the whole, the World of Farmer, how accommodating people have been, and just nice. I don't know how to put it.
Do
you?
What I'm interested to see is, I don't know what it was like before pre-COVID, because I wasn't in it. I didn't know anything about it. But what I'm interested to see, I haven't spoken to any of these people, but I've edited the podcast, so it's safe to say
I know you have, and you've done a great job.
is that I'm interested to see, you know, what happens going forward with you know, people like Paul Sims and Craig Lipsett speaking out about innovations, and how we almost need to, I guess, shake the industry up a bit. And I guess COVID's helping in that as well. And like you were saying to Paul the other day about the fact that, you know, no one ever thought it was going to be possible to turn that vaccine around within a year, but you have. No. So why can't we now sort of say, okay, let's focus our attention on a cure for cancer? I mean, that to me is amazing, and I want to be involved in knowing about it and knowing the people that are involved in that, because, you know, that gives me a real buzz to think that could be the next thing that you guys are all working on. And I kind of guess why shouldn't it be? If we can get a vaccine, let's start working towards all those other, you know, big killers out there, I guess.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think, dare I say it, I'll ask the question. I think there is a common thread between the people, certainly the people that I know in pharma and in and around life science and clinical research. I think we're all passionate about what we're doing. And that's what gets us out of bed in the morning. That's our ultimate drive. And that's what drove me into this industry, as you well know. You know, it wasn't that I wanted to do anything else. I just wanted to do something for patients, for people, and be in and around medicine and development and technology and all of those things. And I've been really fortunate over my career to have been able to kind of circumvent and navigate my way through that, to a point now where the industry has never been more buoyant, never been more interesting and exciting and vibrant. There is so much focus on it, externally in and internally out, you know. So the point I'm trying to make is that people who work in life science support clinical research and are there for the patients. That's what gets them out of bed every morning. And overlaying that with the fact that this has now become common language in the public domain. You know, we turn on the news every day and we see data, we see patient data, we see vaccine data, we see mortality rates, all this kind of language that would never have been in the public domain before is now everyday common speak. We're looking at it, we see it on online news whenever we turn on the news. And I think that is always and also driving this dialogue and the conversation around it. So hopefully, I'm hoping that you're picking up on the passion of the people who are
definitely. I think you've nailed it there. And just listening to you speak every time you're either on the show or anyone else that comes on the show, that's what screams out to us, and that's the staggering difference between the two industries that we've had experience in. Is that construction? Money.
buildings.
People kind of come down, particularly freelancers. Whereas I think everyone we speak to, it's just that it is that common vision, common let's get together, we can do this. And COVID has kind of proved that. And you hear that from everyone that we have on the show, I think.
There has never been a time like this. As I said to you, you know, in a 25-year career of working in and around this space, it's never been a time like it. It's never been more interesting, exciting, varied, and challenging. And the only limitation I've found, this is my experience certainly, the only limitation or challenge I've found is that there just aren't enough hours in a day, because there are more clients than I could ever service. And I think this is the point I wanted to make to both of you, really, is around that, you know, do the right things and it will definitely reap its rewards. And I think the focus that you've got is absolutely spot on around people, communication, and providing a platform, because people are going to listen, they're going to come back, and they're going to want to be on this. This is the other thing. When you're picking up a phone or email or whatever you're doing these days, I'm sure you're not getting many, I no thanks, it's not for me. I mean, how many people do you approach that say, actually, no, thank you? Because I'd love to know that.
Not many.
No. Yeah. I mean, we get the occasional no response and the odd person messages about a little bit, but otherwise, the uptake is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's, again, you know, we kind of love it now. Yeah. It has what started off as a complete side gig, and you know, it was kind of killing two birds with one stone. We were learning, offering a platform, whereas now it's kind of like it's just become part and parcel of the business.
Yes.
You know, it's,
yeah. And similarly for me, my evenings, a couple of evenings a week seem to be this.
Yeah. So
it's really interesting.
Sorry about that. We've hooked you in as well.
It's fine. What I was also going to say is I think probably you will find that most of the people that you're dealing with are very black and white. They're either a yes or a no. There's no gray. We don't do gray. We just get things done.
Yeah.
And if we say we're going to do something, that's what we do. Now, I can only speak for my own professional network, but certainly, you know, the hundreds of people that I've ever worked with in this industry are very similar. We have very common threads that run through us. We're quite factual, objective, get stuff done. You know, we're not high maintenance individuals generally, I would say.
And that suits us down to the ground, because that's what we like. Doers, if you can say you're going to do something, do it. Like,
just
get it done. Like, just gives you so much peace of mind.
We got back to that sport analogy, didn't we, James? And I haven't even asked you about your boxing. I wanted to actually tap into some of that background of where you got your initial drive from as well, because I know that boxing was at the beginning of that journey, and maybe we can touch on that as well as to how that gave you that initial drive and motivation.
Okay, I think it was the challenge and trying something new. I was, as a school kid, probably that annoying individual that was just naturally gifted when it came to running, football, rugby, you name it. I was in the sports team, normally the captain, calling the shots. And I did fairly well at several sports. Again, kind of similar to how my business life went, really. I started playing top level football or soccer for those of you tuning in from the States. But got dropped from the team because effectively I was too short. I'm 5'3", probably on a good day, a pair of heels.
What's that in centimetres for our Europeans?
Ooh, 158 in centimetres. So pretty minuscule.
I'm the same.
But again, I saw it was an obstacle at the time, but it was also, like a book that I've just read, The Obstacle is the Way. It was the way forward. I was kind of like, okay, I'm not going to complain about it. It is what it is. If I was the coach, would probably make exactly that decision. What can I control? I was like, well, I could control what sport I do. I'm pretty good at most of them.
Yeah.
Why don't I do one where that's not a barrier? Got into boxing. I think in my first year, I was national champion. I think it was a record in the amount of fights that it took for someone to win a national title. I think I did it in 7 fights and I was national champion, because I had a couple of people pull out in later rounds and kind of, it was a bit of a fluke, but every time it had never really been done before, and it just went from there. So after my 7th fight, I was boxing on the national team until the point I had kind of 80 odd fights, and, you know, traveled around the world, international boxing tournaments, losing weight, which was horrible, but I think that's, you know, it was just that drive.
It's the discipline, isn't it?
Just that wanting to just excel in anything you're doing. So being a doer, you know, hadn't used LinkedIn until last year. Now I would say we're okay. We're active. If I'm doing something, I just want to be as best good as I can at
Who
it.
Who wants to be the best at it?
I see that. I've seen that. I've absolutely seen that driving you, and I know that must come from somewhere. It's interesting because I did go to school with someone who was a boxer, but he was only ever going to be a boxer. And I don't think that's you. So I think you're very different in that respect. I think he also was quite successful in a boxing career, but his drive and motivation was very different. I think for him, it was something to do with what was going on in the playground, to be honest, that he found his skills. But I sense that might not be the
rivalry as well, maybe, Adam. I mean, I'm one of four, so I've got two brothers and a sister. And again, we're all very competitive. Yeah. So my brother now runs a fitness gym entrepreneur. My younger brother is a freelancer, SaaS programmer. And my younger sister is a stunt performer. You know, we've each kind of wanted that independent.
Yes.
Kind of thing, and it's
and they all have exactly the same drive. They're all, you know, want to win. So yeah, it always makes it very interesting.
Christmas can be fun.
Yeah.
When I see the two of you, I see Axel's head in the middle of the picture of the two of you, because yeah. I think he has some incredible opportunities to build on some of the successes that you're teaching him, clearly. Whether or not he realises it today or not is another matter, but I'm sure he will in the future. Maybe when he looks back at some of these, he might also appreciate that.
Sometimes we regret that, Adam, because he's definitely pulling on a few of our characteristics, and consistency and grit. When he doesn't want to give up, he's certainly one of them. Some days it's a killer.
I mean, you've given me some great insight, and I'm very conscious of, you know, we seem to have nattered for a long time, and actually just bringing you back to the overall, you know, bigger picture. What is that bigger picture looking like? Do you think over the next year or two for Huxley Morton and the company as it goes forward? Where do you see it going? Is it going to be life science? Is it going to spin out into other fields? Have you thought about other opportunities as well?
I think it'll be life sciences. Yeah. You know, we like it. We seem to be disrupting the industry somewhat. We're having clients jump over to us because we are a little bit unique. We've approached them in a unique way. We're getting them different results. You know, recruitment, it's all tends to be the same. But I put out a post the other day. It's not what you do. It's the way that you do it.
I like that one, by the way. And I like that.
And it is very true. Recruitment, you have to find people for jobs and vice versa. But it's how you do it. It's the energy you put into it. You know, when we approach people, it may be via a voice note. It might be a video. It could be all host of different ways that people say, oh, I've never had someone approach me that way before. I'm going to give you a shot. Mm. That's how we get different results. Just nothing revolutionary. But you've just got to be able to put yourself out there, I think, sometimes.
Yeah. It's sometimes just moving the bar. And as I say, you're dealing with a lot of very, dare I use the term, conservative people who are used to dealing with the status quo. That generally, I don't know, you stick with one recruiter and they tend to follow you through your entire career. You build up one contact that you met at one conference 20 years ago, and they're the same person that you go back to every time you're looking for a new job. But that is honestly what you're dealing with.
I was going to say, it looks like you're eking to say
we would, that's the other thing we would like to do, is get out to some of these conferences and actually meet people. Hopefully we'll have been enough of a face on all these platforms that people will actually recognise us, even though we're quite new.
I guarantee that will be the case, because it will be, you're the person. Or they will come to you and they go, oh my God, it's you. Oh, you look so different on the screen. Yeah. You know, that kind of thing. Can I get a selfie?
Well, I think also in terms of the general direction of the business, I would say I'm more of the day-to-day, one step at a time type of guy. So I'm like, what's going to happen next month? Are we going to hit target for that? Are we going to book enough meetings, have enough interviews, get enough offers, et cetera, et cetera? Lucy is the vision. For the business, where is it going to be in 5-10 years? That's Lucy's drive. Like, she almost kind of sets that bar, and then almost just I get after it, and or as a team we do. But like, Lucy's kind of been great at drafting the big vision. I think, you know, even from naming the company and, you know, the early days of what are we going to do with it, Lucy's kind of been the thought generator on a lot of those things, I have to say.
It's interesting, because I think in any working or professional or personal relationship, you need a yin and a yang, don't you? You need to fire off one another's positives, negatives, different behaviours. Because if we were all the same, it would be not only very dull, but actually we'd just be reflecting back what we see. And what I think I recognize with both of you, and actually with what you're doing generally, is that you are not only disrupting but also challenging and trying to spin those things on their head. And I think that's where the opportunities lie, because as we've said, you know, we're dealing with a lot of fixed knowns in this industry. That's what you're learning and clearly are understanding very rapidly, and the more you can kind of flip that on its head, I think, you know, the more traction you'll get ultimately around that. But I think
we're doing our best, Mr. Walker.
We're all doing our best. So I guess in the interest of time, it comes to my favourite part of the conversation, which is, of course, the quickfire round. And in this bit, you'll remember this bit, James. This is where you ask the interviewee some quickfire questions, and we're looking for some quickfire answers. So I'll give you both the opportunity to answer them from each of your perspectives, and maybe give our listeners and our followers some interesting insights outside of what we've already discussed today. So I would suggest perhaps ladies first, then Lucy. So what is the piece of advice you would give to your younger self from what you've learned?
I would definitely say don't worry as much. I say it all the time, but I am a firm believer in everything happens for a reason. I mean, I say that, I still have to remind myself of that every now and again. But growing up, you're always worrying about things. And I guess probably today, in this day and age, more so than ever. I guess what I've learned is just to almost try and just go with the flow and not get caught up worrying about too much, because a lot of it is out of our control.
That's right.
And I've always found that even, you know, situations where I've worried myself, you know, silly, everything actually does always work out in the end, whether it was what I was expecting to happen, or even if it wasn't what I was expecting to happen, it's all worked out in the end, and sometimes for the better. So yeah, don't worry so much is my top tip.
That's great advice. And James, how about for you? What piece of advice would you give to your younger self?
If it was younger by about 5 minutes, I'd maybe think that I should have briefed Lucy on the term quick fire questions. that was not so quick fire. And I'll also should add to that that I'll take that comment back. But yeah, for me, I thought
should
about this.
Should I edit that bit out, by the way? That's going to be edited out, so don't worry.
I thought about this. And for myself, not sure, probably it would actually be do the same again, but set more goals.
Yeah.
So I always seem to hit what I went after, just didn't set enough goals. So look,
it's amazing that
I would just set more goals.
It's amazing. And I think we've also talked to many interviewees around that. And we talked about manifesting with several of them as well. And I think Lucy, you being the bigger picture and manifesting those, and by the sounds of it, James, setting perhaps more smaller goals.
Yeah. No, yeah, that
works well, doesn't it?
There's a great yin and a yang going on there. Tremendous answers. Now, over to you, James. I know we've talked about lots of books, and you've also mentioned some today, but is there one particular book you've got on your bedside table at the moment that you're particularly enjoying that you want our listeners to be aware of?
For me, in terms of books and resources, Adam, yes, you and I talk regularly about books and resources. And I would say most recently, probably The Obstacle is the Way, by yes. Ryan Holiday. Love that. And it kind of sums up a lot of what I've shared with the audience today. But in terms of general resource, LinkedIn, like for our audience, LinkedIn, hands down, as I said, yes. Up to a year ago, barely even used it myself. Throw myself in 2 feet first, as has everyone in the business. We've invested in it heavily. And it's been the most amazing thing. Its growth has been incredible.
Well, there's also a lot to read on there, isn't there? There's people like yourself sharing articles all the time. So
yeah, that's how we've spent hundreds of hours speaking to industry leaders. That's how you and I are connected. That's how this podcast exists.
Yeah.
So LinkedIn, book, Brian Holiday, Obstacle Is Way, resource, LinkedIn.
And Lucy, would you?
Yeah, I'm with you, Adam. I like a podcast. So my favourite go-to at the moment is A Diary of a CEO with Stephen Bartlett. And I also like his book, Happy, Sexy Millionaire, which is actually, the title is questionable, but I really like the book is good. And I also listened to Paul McKenna's, I don't know if the Americans will know him, but Paul McKenna's podcast.
Where I wasn't aware he did one, actually.
Yeah, he interviews various celebs and things like that, and that's quite a good one to tune into.
Interestingly, Stephen Bartlett is someone I listened to for the first time this week. Mm. He was on my other favourite podcast, you know, other to the Huxley Morton, and that's the High Performance Pod. I listened to him, and isn't he incredible? What an amazing guy. What an amazing story.
Yeah.
Just blew me away. He blew me away. Tremendous. So over to you, James. Three qualities you most value when you're building a team, and you are building a team right now. Mm. Obviously, you know, you've got that connection next door to you, so... three qualities
for me. It's all very simple. It's kind of common sense is probably the first thing I look for. Then consistency, so that reliable, steady Eddie. Sometimes don't need to be out there, you know, talent. I'd much rather someone that I can give a task to and know that it'll get done, kind of a doer. Common sense, consistency, and then just someone that's good fun. I mentioned earlier that when we worked in the world of photocopiers and phone systems, the characters in that industry, I mean, God knows what they're up to these days, but the amount of laughs that we had in the office was just incredible. So people that are good fun. So that's my three.
So I'm assuming that Lucy ticks all of those boxes, by the way.
Yeah.
Well. And for you, Lucy, what three qualities are you looking for in...
Good work ethic.
With their hands.
Yeah. Good personality and trustworthy, I think, really, are my top three.
I like that. I can identify with that. Yeah, trust is a big one on my list as well. Mm. Oh, I'm chuckling. Okay. what's your favourite thing outside of work then? For you, James. What do you enjoy doing when you're not working?
Friends, family, particularly Axel, whatever we're doing with him is great. And again, that's why we started the business to work for ourselves, was so that we could do just that. You know, working all day, making all the money in the world isn't everything. Of course, you know, money's there to make you comfortable, I would say. Doesn't buy happiness. So, yeah, friends, family, and then, yeah, keeping fit, going to the gym and competing in whatever it is. Whether it's, you know, sports, whether it's Monopoly, whether it's a game at Christmas.
Whether it's getting the most connections on LinkedIn. We do actually track all of that. We track our connections. We track how many posts we've done. We've actually got an incentive for our staff on at the moment, which is kind of like, you know.
Get about everything. We track it. What gets tracked gets improved.
So, I know who's winning that. I'm going to guess it's Joseph.
He's second.
Wow.
Yeah, I think
because he's the one that seems to be making the most noise that I see, but
yeah,
maybe
no, he's very good.
I think they're all doing really well. Yeah, like, really impressed well. By them,
but yeah, I think Lakia might
I think she's gonna notch
get it.
There's a few other metrics
thrown in there, and she's doing particularly well.
I'm glad you're big on metrics, because metrics, you know, I love data, and metrics are the things that drives all of this. And you've got to know your numbers. Isn't that, I don't know who said that, but you've got to know your numbers.
Yeah.
So just to bring it all back in full circle, and this is probably to both of you. So let's see if you can say one golden rule in life and business that you both can agree upon. What do you think that would be?
Oh, I don't know if we agree. We kind of agree, don't we?
Well, I would say just be a nice person, really. Just be a nice person. If you're going to say you're going to do something, do it. And just be nice, be kind, and I guess that will get you in good stead.
And I agree with that. Yeah, be nice. If you say you're going to do something, do it. But I'd also say, you know, be happy with what you've got, but never satisfied. Always keep that pushing, because I think once you slow down, that's when life will just become boring.
Comfortable chair is not good for anyone. No one needs a comfortable chair. Not until they're maybe 70 and with a pipe.
And I think, you know, I've probably taken that from my dad. You know, he did not want to retire.
No.
He just kept going. He got dragged back into work and then loved talking about the work stories and things like that. It's just, I think we're both a bit like that, aren't we? We're kind of, we like, yeah, it's that busyness.
I don't ever see,
be happy, but don't be satisfied.
Retiring. I never think about that. You know, we've got some friends that are like, oh yeah, it's only 30 years till we got to retire. And I'm thinking, how does that even come across your wavelength?
No, I get this energy. I get this energy from both of you. And I got that before I met you in person. When I met you in person, it was incredibly crystal clear to me. And I'm sure that our listeners will gather that when they have the opportunity to meet you, hopefully in person at some point. But this has been a tremendous insight. I think you've given our listeners some real insight into what makes you both tick, the magic behind Huxley Morton, and some of the enthusiasm and drive that is continuing to drive the success that I think you're experiencing, but will continue to succeed in the future. So, you know, really appreciate you taking the time today to put yourselves both on the hot seat, and hopefully this isn't too tough to listen back to, James or Lucy, when you're back and editing this in the editing suite.
Yeah.
Fantastic. No, it's been good fun. I knew it would be. And as much as anything, I know who I can contact if I ever want to take a 6-week European holiday now.
Don't tell anyone. Whatever you do, don't tell anyone. It's been an absolute pleasure. And as I say, thanks for being so open and honest today. And I don't know what it felt like to be on the hot seat, but now you know.
Yeah.
Very good.
Thanks, Adam.
Cheers, Adam. Bye-bye.